If you own vacant land, or maybe property with just significant acreage, you understand a basic truth almost immediately. You just cannot be everywhere at once. Even with like the best modern technology, trying to keep constant eyes on huge plots of land, it's a massive task.
It really is. The reality of owning large properties, especially vacant ones, is that trespassers are, well, unfortunately, they're almost an inevitable part of the equation.
Right.
So our mission today is really to give you some actionable intelligence, not just theory, on how to actually deal with this challenge.
Okay, and we've pulled together some great sources for this deep dive. We're mostly looking at practical tips, safety strategies from the American Hunting Lease Association, the AHLA.
That's right.
And it seems like a two-pronged approach. First, some, let's say, sophisticated ways to detect intruders. And second, that really critical safety net of vacant land insurance. We're trying to move beyond just, putting up a sign and hoping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can't rely on watching constantly. We almost have to become like forensic investigators of our own land.
Ah, okay.
And that starts really with a low-tech approach,
Yeah.
checking the boundaries.
All right, let's unpack this then. If you're doing a routine perimeter check, what are those first things that tell you a person, not just, when or an animal, has breached the property?
Well, the AHLA sources suggest focusing first on your fence line and your gates. You need to look specifically for fences that have been cut or damaged, maybe even run over.
Okay.
The key isn't just seeing damage, it's figuring out the pattern of the damage. A fence cut with wire snips or clearly crushed by a vehicle, that looks very different from a tree falling on it or just wear and tear from wildlife.
Okay, that's the distinction. We're looking for signs of deliberate human action.
Correct. And the same thing applies to gates. If a gate is just left open, well, unless you're dealing with some really clever animals, that usually points to human interaction.
Makes sense.
And then once you move past the fence line, you really have to look down. Look at the ground.
Right, the ground. It holds that temporary, but maybe the most crucial evidence, doesn't it?
Right.
So what should we be scouting for when we examine trails or pathways?
Yeah, you're looking for unfamiliar tire tracks, for sure, or worn trails in areas that you rarely, if ever, use yourself. The source material specifically mentions evidence left by, quote, careless trespassers. And this often means tracks, maybe deep ruts from a vehicle, or even down trees.
Down
Yeah,
trees.
if a tree has clearly been pushed over or scraped up by a big vehicle trying to make a new path where there wasn't one, it's a pretty unambiguous clue. It suggests someone's been there repeatedly, or at least aggressively, using an access point they shouldn't be.
That is highly actionable intelligence right there. Okay, now let's bring in technology. Because physical checks, they take time. Cameras become our remote eyes. So if I'm a landowner, what's the strategic thinking for placing a trail camera effectively?
You need to think like the trespasser. Anticipate the easiest route of entry for them.
Okay.
So you want to target access points that are, well, easiest for an intruder to use. Things like existing roadways, trailheads, especially any that are near public roads.
Ah, okay.
Think about it from their perspective. Where can I park my truck to be least visible, but still get onto the property easily?
So being close to public roads is key because that's likely the entry and exit point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the trick is setting those cameras up strategically, but also keeping them hidden, or at least out of plain sight. They serve two purposes, maybe deterrence if they're seen, but more importantly, evidence collection.
And the type of camera matters here too, right? The sources highlight cellular cameras. Why is that connectivity so important for risk mitigation?
It's all about immediacy
Hmm.
and documentation. Cellular cameras send the images right to your phone,
Right.
so you can check frequently, almost in real time, instead of waiting weeks to go pull an SD card.
Right.
But the biggest point here, I think, is the link to finance and law. Having proof, timestamp pictures, maybe video is absolutely vital for any potential insurance claim you might need to make, or even legal action against trespassers later on.
Yeah.
These cameras are essential evidence collectors.
That really underlines the connection between evidence and, well, financial protection. Okay, so beyond tracks and photos, what about actual items? What tangible things are uninvited guests leaving behind that act as clues?
Oh, it really runs the gamut. I mean, the obvious clues are things like litter beer cans, food wrappers, maybe remnants of a small campfire.
Standard stuff.
Yeah. But what's really interesting is the gear sometimes left by trespassers who might genuinely, though mistakenly, believe the land is public or somehow theirs to use.
Like someone actually setting up shop.
Precisely. We're talking about things like tree stands left up or incredibly, sometimes even their own trail camera.
No way! Their own cameras!
Yes. If you find unfamiliar, maybe well-maintained hunting gear or monitoring equipment set up on your land, that's a huge red flag. It indicates someone has been using your property pretty extensively, probably thinking they have a right to be there.
Wow. That's a level of boldness born from ignorance, maybe. Not necessarily malice in all cases.
Could be, yeah.
Now, for property owners who actually live on or very near their acreage, they have an advantage. Vigilance through sound. What kinds of sounds should immediately put them on high alert?
Basically, any activity that shouldn't be happening at that specific time or in that location, the source is specifically warned to listen for things like gunshots, obviously.
Right.
Or other sounds that strongly suggest hunting activity, especially if it's outside of legal seasons or if you haven't given anyone permission. If you hear unexpected sounds of, say, ATVs or other aggressive recreational use, that's almost certainly a trespasser.
Okay. And this brings us to something really critical, a safety protocol that, honestly, we cannot emphasize enough. It's stressed in all the resource materials. What is the absolute number one instruction for landowners when they detect a trespasser on their property?
The instruction is crystal clear and absolute. Do not approach those trespassers yourself.
Okay.
Personal confrontation, especially with someone who might be armed, maybe hunting, or just potentially aggressive, it's extremely dangerous. It should be avoided entirely.
So what's the protocol then? If you don't approach, what do you do?
You need to contact local law enforcement immediately, as soon as you detect that activity. Your job is to document what you see or hear and report it, not to engage.
Right.
And if you are using those cellular cameras we talked about, you likely have the documentation, the photos, the timestamps to give accurate, real-time information to the authorities without putting yourself in physical danger.
That's
okay. Yeah,
that pause is important because that is probably the single most critical piece of advice we've covered. Risking a confrontation over, what, a damaged fence or a tree stand, it's just not worth the potential legal trouble and, frankly, the physical risk.
Couldn't agree more. Your safety and your legal standing have to be the top priority. Always.
Okay. Moving on then, let's talk about community vigilance. One of the most effective ways to multiply your eyes and ears is simply getting to know the people around you. How does leveraging that neighbor advantage significantly help protect your property?
Well, it basically shifts the monitoring burden from just one person, you, to a whole network.
Mm.
Getting to know your neighbors means you can kind of keep an eye on each other's places. You become extra sets of eyes and ears for each other.
Mm.
But the number one benefit, I think, is context.
Context. How so?
Cooperation helps everyone quickly recognize, you know, the usual vehicles, the faces, the routines of people who are supposed to be there, authorized guests, contractors, whatever, versus those who clearly don't belong.
Ah, I see. So if a neighbor sees some strange truck parked down by your property line for hours, they'll know immediately if that vehicle belongs to, say, a logger you hired or a guest hunter, or if it's a complete stranger acting suspiciously.
Exactly.
They have the context needed to decide whether to just note it or maybe make a report.
Precisely. Yeah, it turns potentially anonymous activity into something more identifiable, maybe a manageable risk. Now, we've covered all these physical detection strategies, the tracks, cameras, neighbors, but the HLA gives us a really crucial reminder about the limits of physical deterrence itself.
Right. They reinforce that while, yes, we should use fences and post no trespassing signs to discourage people, that deterrence is, and I quote, not 100% effective.
Mm-hmm.
Accidents and liability are just. Well, they seem inevitable in property ownership, vacant or not.
And that's the perfect pivot point, isn't it? Because while all these physical tips aim at detection, they don't do anything for protection against liability.
Good point.
If someone, even if they're trespassing, gets injured on your property, you, the landowner, could face massive legal costs and financial liability. And this is exactly why a strong vacant land insurance policy is described by HLA as, quote, vital.
The legal risk is just huge. It's not only about someone maybe stealing timber or poaching. It's about the potential cost of defending yourself in court or paying a settlement if an injury happens on your land.
Exactly.
So let's dive into that financial safety net itself. We need to understand the nuts and bolts of what good coverage actually looks like. The AHLA's vacant land insurance program mentions some specific terms, aggregate and per occurrence limits. Can you break those down for us?
Absolutely. Yeah, when you look at liability coverage, you need to understand the maximum amounts the policy will pay. So the source material highlights coverage details like $2 million aggregate
right.
and $1 million per occurrence.
Okay.
The per occurrence limit, that's the $1,000 in this example, is the maximum amount the policy will pay out for any single incident or accident that happens on your property.
So like if a trespasser, maybe a hunter, falls out of a cheese stand they illegally put up on my land, that whole incident is one occurrence.
Exactly. That's one occurrence capped at $1 million for that specific event. Then the aggregate limit, the $2 million, is the total maximum the policy will pay out over the entire policy period, which is usually 1 year, no matter how many separate occurrences might happen during that year.
Got it. Understanding those numbers is key. But you mentioned something else that sounded really interesting for the consumer, the zero deductible feature. Zero deductible on a liability claim feels rare and incredibly valuable. Why is that specific feature such a game changer for a property owner dealing with these high-risk scenarios like trespassers?
Well, it basically removes the financial barrier to actually using your protection when you need it.
How so?
If you have, say, a $5,000 deductible, you might hesitate to file a claim for a smaller legal issue or a minor injury.
Right.
Because you have to pay that first chunk yourself.
Yeah.
And sometimes those smaller issues can snowball into much bigger problems later if they aren't dealt with properly. A zero deductible means you can immediately use the insurance for legal defense or settlement costs without having to shell out potentially thousands of dollars out of your own pocket first. It ensures the policy is fully usable right from dollar one.
So the policy isn't just for like the absolute worst case scenario. It's designed to be actively used even for smaller incidents that could still be costly.
Precisely. And it seems the AHLA doesn't just offer a financial policy. They actually bundle resources to help you mitigate the risk in the first place. This feels like it moves beyond just transactional insurance.
Yeah. What's the significance of the included legal resources, for example?
Well, this is where that risk mitigation value really comes in. For instance, they mentioned including a free, custom-created, attorney-approved liability waiver. Now, this isn't just some, you know, throwaway freebie. It's a legal tool. While using it is optional, just having an attorney-approved waiver ready to go is often your first line of defense. If you ever do allow authorized guests onto your land, like friends, family, maybe hunters you lease to, it establishes a clear acknowledgement of the risks involved.
So they're not just covering potential losses, they're actually providing tools to help prevent the lawsuit from even happening.
Exactly right. And they also provide educational material, like the Landowner Guide to Make Your Land More Safe, which is a PDF guide. Plus, they give you actual physical deterrence by including 12 free no trespassing signs.
12 signs, okay.
Yeah. Those signs, combined with a free American Hunting Lease Association membership that comes with the policy, it shows a more holistic approach. You get the coverage, you get education on safety, and you get physical deterrence tools.
That does sound comprehensive. And for someone who realizes they need this coverage, like right now, what are the logistics? Is getting it activated a long, drawn-out process?
No, it seems designed for speed, actually. They specifically mention next day coverage is available.
Wow, next day.
And the certificates of insurance, which are your proof of coverage, are emailed within 24 hours of purchase. That speed really reflects the sometimes urgent nature of needing this kind of protection when you own vacant land.
Okay, so let's bring this all together. We started this deep dive acknowledging that it's basically impossible to constantly monitor large acreage physically.
Right.
We've distilled some really actionable intelligence on how to be a better land detective.
Right.
You know, checking for specific human-caused damage, using those cellular cameras strategically at entry points, and leveraging your neighbors as extra eyes.
But protection really requires combining that kind of smart vigilance with comprehensive financial security. Because the truth, reinforced by these AHLA sources, is that physical barriers are always going to be imperfect.
Yeah.
You absolutely need that legal and financial safety, like the zero deductible policy, the robust liability coverage, to handle the almost inevitable risk of injury claims or other issues related to trespassers.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, the knowledge we've gained here today is maybe about shifting the owner's priorities a bit. The landowner probably needs to accept that trespass isn't really a matter of if, but more like when.
That's a good way to put it. And it raises an important question for you, the listener, based on this material we've discussed. If the primary goal of managing your property risk is liability mitigation, how does securing something like a zero deductible next day coverage liability policy, maybe with those defined $1 million per occurrence limits, how does that actually change your priority of actions?
Interesting question.
Does it maybe free you up to focus a little less on, say, building higher fences or more elaborate physical barriers, and maybe focus more on ensuring you have the necessary legal paperwork, the waivers, the photographic documentation system in place that you need when an incident eventually, inevitably, occurs. Something to consider as you review your own property safety plan this year.